Lori has credentials that go on and on and on. She has a PhD. She was trained as a science of mind practitioner. She's gone to seminary and become an interfaith minister. She was for many years a hospital chaplain. She does signing for people who are hearing impaired, and she worked in the education for teaching people how to help deaf people for decades, and did amazing work in that area. So Lori's been lots of places doing lots and lots of things. But when I think of Lori, I think of being in the sanctuary at the Celebration Center on Monday afternoon after Ministry of Prayer, where we would either sing and drink Vietnamese iced coffee in the summer and hot coffee in the winter, or we would play cribbage. And for years and years, Lori and I played together on Monday afternoons, and it was something I looked forward to tremendously. And so when I think of Lori, I think of playing, and that's a lovely thing. But Lori also has a great deal of wisdom and clarity to offer us. So I'm grateful she's going to speak to us today. So here is Reverend Dr. Lori Bolster.
Well, thank you. That's quite the introduction. Yeah, singing was a major part of my life while I was still there. And we did have a good time. Turn that sound system on and rock. Okay, well, this talk today is about spiritual evolution. It is chapter 6 in the Can We Talk to God book by Ernest Holmes. This book was originally a series of lectures that he did in the early 1930s. So the book was published in 34. That's almost 90 years ago. And so I'm going to start with him, and then we'll go from there and modernize it. So here's a bit from the book. It's a dense chapter. You read this chapter and it's got a lot in it, and it's the kind maybe you want to say it out loud and talk to yourself about what does that mean. So here we go. I've extracted a piece. As we trace the unfoldment of human personality, we find a calm, unhurried. Oh, I wanted to first. Definition of evolution. Where did I do with it? Well, evolution is a change over time. Here we go. Sorry, that's in a different place. Evolution. Where evolution is when something develops and diversifies from something that was earlier. There's a gradual development, especially from something that's simple to more complex. Understanding what evolution really is kind of critical, not just what we, you know, some people make up about what it means. It can be related to religion and a belief. It can be about sacred things, or it can be non-religious. It can be reflective. It can be related to nature, things like that. And so this is from almost 90 years ago, and Holmes is writing that as we trace the unfoldment of human personality, we find a calm, unhurried, definite, and irresistible impulse building from finer forms and more intelligent avenues of self-expression into these. It comes up through all the stages of unconscious and simple conscious organism until at last it reaches a cycle which ushers in self-conscious humanity. A very definite step takes place when we come to self-conscious humanity. The divine spirit has evolved a living soul, an emanation of itself, that this soul may become immortal, but individualized. Why is it necessary that the soul shall undergo the experiences of evolution? Individuality means spontaneity, self-choice, volition, reality, creative ability. And if we were to assume individuality and volition without law to bring its choice into fruition, we would have a dream, a hallucination, or a fantasy. Individuality presupposes choice, which presupposes the possibility of bringing choice into experience. And only through experience can it come fully full circle into conscious unity with the divine mind. When working ideas emerge from an unconscious to a self-conscious state, it becomes individualized. And at the doorway of self-choice, arbitrary methods of evolution cease. And as we come to the point where we know ourselves, we are individualized, the cosmic mind now waits for us to recognize our relationship to it. When we reach self-consciousness, the spirit can do nothing more for us until we consciously cooperate with it. And since human beings first said, "I am," nothing has been forced upon us. We have lived, learned, experienced, and discovered. And so, from there, we've discovered, and we've discovered things that we believe. Beliefs, according to some, are ideas that we cling to, or because we want something to be true, or we wish it were true, and that's a belief. It's something we hold on to. Chances are we learn it as young children, and then we hold on to it, and then some people stay there. Whatever you believe, learned in Sunday school when you were 4 years old, that's your belief. On the other hand, a faith is something where you're letting go. You're opening to what is the truth. What's going on here? What's real? And you wait and deal with whatever it turns out to be, whatever that truth is. It's an opening to the unknown. So faith is just a willingness to show up and see what's happening, what is here, whether it's in real life or it's, you know, having faith in something's going to happen, or a faith in goodness, a faith in a creative force, a faith in that if I participate in the decisions and intentions of my life, that something will come of that along the lines of what I was hoping would come along the lines of that. And so, this reminds me of Byron Katie, who, when people are struggling with something, Byron Katie's got these four questions that she asks. Is it true? Is whatever it is you're struggling with or thinking about yourself, as you're becoming self-conscious, some people become very self-critical. They're not just self-aware, they're self-critical. Like, maybe I don't have any value, or maybe I'm not good enough. And she starts asking, is it true? How do you know it's true? Are you certain it's true? How are you certain it's true? And how do you react when you believe that's true? And then who would you be if you didn't hold that belief? And so we have the choices about who are we and what are we choosing to believe and how are we having faith and what is faith about for us? And you know, as spiritual beings, which can be either part of a religion or part of sitting in nature or engaging in contemplative prayer or yoga or meditation, people's spiritual practices can range the gamut. And it turns out that many people who are atheists, frankly, are rejecting that really low-level belief of religion, that here are the rules, and here's how it goes, and here's what we believe, and you're going to believe it too. And we've believed this for centuries. Sometimes the atheists and agnostics are actually rejecting that, but there are higher forms of belief and of faith. Recently, there's a fellow named Brian McLaren who's written a book, and he looked at a lot of the theorists about human development and stages of development, stages of growth, stages of spiritual development. And he synthesized them down into four that seem fairly straightforward and make sense to me. And so as we're talking about spiritual evolution, Holmes is talking about getting a human being to the point where they're aware of, oh, I have an opportunity to participate in this development of myself, of my faith and where I'm going and who I am and who I am becoming. And McLaren is suggesting that these stages start with one that's simplicity. It's dual, it's right, wrong, good, bad, lie versus truth. Very simple. There it is. And this is one that we're all born into, basically. We have nothing. And then we learn how to get by, because all we're about is survival. And then gradually people within a religion that's functioning that way, or belief or faith system that's believing that, may start to evolve to a point of a level of what he calls complexity, where it's the pragmatics of everyday life where you realize, oh, different people have different ideas. And now I have to negotiate and figure out how to get along with these people. And so within a religion, if we have a set of rules, and now I'm starting to wonder about these rules, and what I'm being told is the truth about who God is, or what God is, or what I'm supposed to believe, or how I'm supposed to behave. I remember very clearly sitting in a sanctuary once upon a time, I was probably 11, realizing that I just didn't think that what this preacher was saying made any sense at all. When you think about the scope of the universe, I don't see how this can be true. And that was a real watershed moment for me. That changed my life. But that's reaching a level of, yeah, this, I don't see how this is working. But then we work out in society how to get along with people. How to function within community in life, but also within our spiritual center or religious practices. And then we get to the point of what McLaren refers to as perplexity. Simplicity, complexity, perplexity, where, yeah, this is what these rules and these answers and resolutions that people are offering me just are no longer working at all. And that's the point where many people leave whatever religion they're in, because they are evolving beyond where the religion is functioning. And it's very interesting, because a congregation or a spiritual center cannot, the people within it cannot as a group evolve beyond the minister or the spiritual leader. So whatever level the spiritual leader is at, that's the ceiling for the congregation. So that's why it's really... But on the other hand, you can have a spiritual leader who evolves beyond the congregation that they cannot handle where this preacher's going. And that's when sometimes a congregation will dismiss the minister, because they're saying things that to the congregation is, you know, that's sacrilegious. That's no, you are in violation of our rules about our religion and what we believe. So it's very, you've got to have... The leader needs to be able to lead, but if they get too far evolved, the congregation can't handle it and will, you know, dismiss them, or people just leave. They go someplace else that has more rules that they can feel comfortable with and stay with. So the spiritual evolution is just sort of fascinating, because it's for an individual and our self growth and evolving awareness of who we are and what's going on in the world and how we see things. But it's also where our spiritual home is, and where's the home at? Is the home evolving, or is the home settled into some pretty straightforward rules and is living there and really not interested in curiosity about other things? So how does this all come together then? And then beyond simplicity, complexity, perplexity, and where people may leave, is harmony. That's where we come into an understanding of how to get along, and we transcend these issues and become more concerned about getting along with people, kindness, love, etc., willingness to open to the unknown, and we start growing together. If you've got some peeps, you can grow together. like what this group is doing here. It's growing together. It's open to new ideas. It's opening to an understanding about one's own self and one's own growth, etc. And so you move through these, and as you rise through them, evolve through them, you don't then say, oh, you guys are stupid or dumb or bad or that's too simple. No, no, no. These all become part of who we are as we move and grow and learn. And we just do this in an interesting spiral. There's an image that comes out of Spiral Dynamics that looks like that, where you get the real primitive levels of understanding because people are just trying to survive. And then you learn how to get along, and we have our rules, but if you don't agree with us, then you're wrong. And then gradually you learn, oh, there's other people, but they can have their thing and we can have our thing and we're all okay. And then you grow into getting along with negotiating with each other, doing business together, transactions, exchanges. And then you grow into, oh, we have a community. Everybody gets to sit at the table. We all have something value to bring to our community. And then you go from there into the higher levels, and you just keep learning and growing and expanding. And again, you don't come down here and say, well, these are primitive, they're bad, they're no good. No, 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 because we all include this. So you grow through these various stages of development, which is there's books about these things. And so then I ran across, and I'm going to run out of time here. Can I have all the way till 10, Connie? I can't hear you.
You can have it till 10 after if you need it.
Oh, fabulous. Thank you. Okay, good. Here's the interesting part. Knowing all of this and looking at, yeah, the rest of it was boring. Now we get to the good stuff. But it's foundational. It's that spiral of growth. It's that spiral of becoming more and more open. It's that spiral of becoming open at the top, but at the same time becoming more aware and conscious of who we are as individuals and how we relate to this amazing creative force that is the cosmos we live in. Now there's this fellow I ran across named Dr. Jeffrey Redinger. He wrote a book called Cured: The Life-Changing Science of Spontaneous Healing. He says that, you know, sometimes people just get over a disease that they're supposed to die of, but then all of a sudden the disease is gone and nobody has an explanation. When somebody's getting over something that they're supposed to be getting worse of, frequently what happens is the doctors will tell that person, whatever you're doing, keep doing it because it's working. He says the doctors, they never learn to get curious and say, well, wait a minute, what are you doing? And he studied 124 people who experienced spontaneous healing from things that shouldn't happen, shouldn't have happened. And he's been studying this for 20 years, now has written this book. He says that this has been fascinating because 85% of illnesses in this country are related to lifestyle. Now, when the medical people are talking about what tends to happen to people with certain diseases or certain circumstances, they talk about the average. Here's the, you know, the bulk of the population that have this issue going on. Here's tends what happens. But he says, you know, there's these supers, like super athletes that go to the Olympics. Well, there's these super health engaged people who managed to get past diseases that should have killed them. And he starts looking at that. Now, in general, lifestyle things, people will fall off a cliff. But he says these people fell off the cliff, but then they figured out how to build themselves a ladder to get back up on top. And he starts talking to them about what did they do. And this ties in this whole mind, body, soul, part of the creative force process for me. This is serious evolution, spiritual life growth reality. The number one thing is, of course, maybe of course, nutrition. So this is not about cutting out the bad stuff. It's about what are you feeding your body, because your whole body, your whole self is this amazing system with all these parts and aspects. And so what are you putting in your body that you put good stuff in? Two things we know stay away from sugar because it's highly inflammatory, and the highly processed grains. Lots of empty calories, and they're not food for your body. And it's important. And his point he made that just blew me away was, he said, you know, 100 years ago or whenever, people would eat like 4 pounds of sugar a year. Now, because the sugar is put in everything, the average person is eating 154 pounds of sugar a year. And our bodies are not built to process that. And so that's why people talk about sugar so much. We just don't have the system to process it. Anyway, the second thing, but he said some of these patients didn't stop eating sugar and didn't stop eating, you know, enriched wheat or flour. They kept doing it, and they still managed to get past whatever was eating them. Second thing, a big thing, is the immune system. Take care of your immune system. These are real physical practicalities. Take care of your body. Put good food in your body, partly because that will help you take care of your biome, your physical body, your immune system. And he says there's two ways of looking at disease processes and immunity. One is the thing about, well, you take a vaccine or you take something that kills the bacteria. But the other one is you take care of your biome properly, and then the pathogen can't get in anyway. That's interesting. That's a reason to stay really healthy, because you got a healthy immune system. It just, stuff can't get in, and you stay healthy. The third thing is to handle your stress response better. We're all under so much, you know, input 24/7 anymore. If you are paying it, if you're into the internet or watching the news, it's just nonstop. I tried to watch the news the other night and realized, oh, I just can't do this. It was all about everything that I just don't need to hear this. There's nothing in this that's life enhancing. And so that was the end of the news that night. But what are we doing? Because if we're washing our body, soaking our body in stress response chemistry, such as cortisol, norepinephrine, adrenaline, and that becomes our normal state, that's just mind-blowing. Rather than washing our body and soaking it in things that are related to love and interaction with friends and being with people, oxytocin, serotonin, dopamines. Those keep your immune system in good shape. They keep the body healthy. They keep us healthy. They keep our mind and our soul healthy. And then the last thing was, once you're taking all of this, does the person take care of one's own identity? Who are you? Who are you on the planet? When people find out they might have 6 months to live, they decide, well, I guess I don't have to put up with whatever anymore. I don't have to go to college afterwards, or after all. I don't have to stay trying to deal with you all the time, because I got other things to do. And they get involved with things that are really more about who they are as an authentic person. They get involved with the arts. They get involved with dance. They write. They have fun. They spend time in nature. They spend time with friends. And everybody learns differently, so there's no prescription about how to do this, how to take care of oneself. But these are the people who end up saying, this disease was the biggest gift of my life, because it turned them into who they really are, into their authentic self. They got way healthier, way wholer in a holistic fashion. They showed up as their real self. They engaged in life as who they truly are, as a spiritually expansive being. And now that's an interesting form of growth. And so spiritual evolution, none of us has to have a challenge like a critically dangerous disease to decide that I'm going to turn into this evolving creature that Holmes was talking about. Why is it necessary that the soul shall undergo the experience of evolution? Individuality means spontaneity, self-choice, volition, reality, creative ability. Add some intentionality to that, add some clarity, add some authenticity. And now we're taking a basic concept of evolution, of what we believe, why would we believe it? Who are we when we believe that? Moving into a relationship with a faith in, I understand how this works, this creative force, my relationship to it, and that I am of it. And then paying attention to the practicalities of life in a body walking around on a planet, which is just mind-blowing. And that 450,000 light years away that somebody mentioned a little while ago, that's like right down the street in terms of what the James Webb Observatory can see, where they're looking at thousands of light years out into the future and looking at millions of galaxies. It's like, we're just this little speck. And so, all right, let's make the best of it. Let's find out who we really are. If we truly take care of our body self and our love self, our affection self, or hanging out with friends and things that wash our body with all these good, healthy, happy immunity kinds of chemistries, rather than getting soaked into things and we make choices. I'm going to turn the news on or not. I'm going to eat this or not, or eat something else. I'm going to do this or I'm going to do something. We're making choices. And they create who we are. They create how we are. And then we create who we really are in this creative force. And that ripples. And it matters. And so I will stop there. Thank you.